Hello and welcome to That's My Purse Pod, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
So it's been a little while since we have all got together. I think our last episode was in October of last year when we had Squirrel Tactics. Again, thank you very much to Squirrel Tactics. If you are not subscribed to his YouTube channel and you love King of the Hill, what are you waiting for? Go ahead and subscribe to it. It's been a while, but the new season is out, season 15. I'm actually very happy that it's out because I was kind of worried for a while that we were going to get one of those situations where it's like 3 years between seasons, because we know for a fact that that Hulu signed for seasons 15, 16, and 17, and they'll probably sign for more. I mean, as long as it does well and as long as Mike Judge and team wants to keep doing it. But I was worried it was going to be like, oh, is it going to be that thing where it's like 3 years between seasons, the way, you know, Netflix and Hulu and all them do that. But no, it was like, it was literally the next year, kind of like the old days where you had a new season every year. This season's 10 episodes, though. So whatever, maybe hopefully they remove that cap. But I'm excited. What do you think, Jimmy?
I'm excited for the new season. I'm excited for this season. I have not watched more than the one episode we're talking about today. So I don't know what's going to happen. I want more King of the Hill. I don't know. I kind of feel like last season, or how I felt in the beginning, like we're really getting geared up. So I'm excited. I hope we can get more stuff going on. I know they're pushing King of the Hill really hard because I'm heading off to San Diego Comic-Con this weekend. And Hulu has said that they are going to be bringing, like, King of the Hill is going to be part of their animation celebration this year. So it's cool mm-hmm. that it's really getting integrated and all that. I'm excited for it. I'm excited for King of the Hill. I guess maybe I'm a little out of the loop. I didn't know it was this week that it came back, but I'm excited.
Yeah. Today is a big day for King of the Hill, or for entertainment in general. Not only did King of the Hill come back, but we finally got a Doomsday trailer. I want them to be a crossover event, though, because technically, I mean, you know, Hank Hill is now a Disney property and so is Avengers. There could be a chance for them to cross over.
Hank Hill in the Avenger universe. Maybe Doom will get rid of him. I hope not. I like Hank. So yeah,
that's going to be one of the areas of Battleworld. It'll be Arlen.
I mean, I just think when I think about it, I think of the episode where, like, do you remember when they had to bring the McMansion down and they all, like, grabbed mm-hmm. weapons? That was like the Avengers Assemble moment.
Yes.
For Rainy Street.
Yeah, I remember that one. They all have their weapons, like a axe and a bat and a sledgehammer, all that fun stuff. There is, I feel like I maybe have mentioned it on a podcast before, but like back in the 90s, you know, they would do all these like animation, I forget what it was called, but there was like an animation block in the 90s. And they would advertise it. And it wasn't unusual for there to be like crossover advertisements or whatever. So there is a commercial, and I'll put it in the notes. There is a commercial that you can see on YouTube right now that shows Hank Hill interacting with the Silver Surfer. So canonically, that means that Hank Hill exists in the Marvel Universe.
Or do all universes exist in the Marvel? Like, because we can travel through universes.
True.
So is Loki holding on to like the timeline of King of the Hill? And then is King of the Hill the same universe as like Bob's Burgers? Because there was that little like, was it a commercial? No, the Fortnite game commercial mm-hmm. where they're all playing together. So is it like all the Fox animated shows are playing yet? So it's like, is it all?
There are some scenes in Bob's Burgers where you can see the Dale's Dead Bug truck parked out front of the restaurant. So it's possible.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I got to go back. I love, is this a recent one or like an older episode?
No, these are older episodes. There's a few where you can just see, it's like a blink and you miss it thing, but you could see Dale's Dead Bug, the truck parked right outside.
It feels familiar. Oh, you're right. And it has the Queen Anne on it.
Yeah. Well, and then if you pay attention, like next door, there is a business called Propane Accessories. but it's like a BDSM store.
Okay. Oh, wow. So, I mean, like, then it is the same, unless that's our alternate version of Dale.
I don't know. I'm going with the headcanon that it is in the same universe. But then that must mean that, like Dale's not making trips that far. So that must mean that this is Bob's Burgers is, like, one city over or something.
No, well, no, they can't be because they're on the coast. Bob's Burgers is next to the ocean.
That's true. They are in New Jersey. Maybe there's a, maybe there's Dale discovered some kind of portal that allows him to teleport. The aliens gave it to him.
Oh, man. I would love a road trip, though. We need a King of the Hill episode where there's a road trip to, like, Canada or something.
I mean, there's been a few road trip episodes.
But not, like, far, far. Yeah.
Well, I guess it depends, because, like, a Queasy Rider, they take the motorcycle all the way to South Dakota.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then Hank breaks his glass. I like that. I would love if they go to California, because, like, I'm going to pitch an idea now. A TV show producer comes to Ireland and they want to make a sitcom based off of Hank's life. And, like, he has to go to California because, like, that's where the deal is happening. And he just hates every aspect of it. Like, everything is, like, the way they cast him. Like, who's going to be Hank, though? Daniel Day-Lewis comes out of retirement to play Hank Hill. He's like, this is the character I'm dying to play.
Of course, he's a method actor, so you know he's going to get a job at Strickland. That would actually be an interesting episode.
To dive into the mind of this humble worker. Oh, man. I would love it. I think, yeah, I want to see them go to California. Well, then again, now it's not like they haven't traveled, you know, Hank and Peggy. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, okay. But now I'm excited. Bob's Burgers. Bob's Burgers, Marvel, we'll see whatever's next.
They just need to do a combination. You know it would make a ton of money.
Of which one? A Bob's Burgers and King of the Hill or Marvel King of the Hill?
Both. Though I feel like the Bob's Burgers King of the Hill is much more attainable. I mean, they've done crossover events before. Like Family Guy has crossed over with Simpsons, and Simpsons has also crossed over with Futurama. Archer and Bob's Burgers did a crossover. I mean, in the most technical sense, I guess you could say that there was already a King of the Hill and Simpsons crossover, though it was just like a quick cameo. The episode where, I don't remember the name of the episode, but it was a Simpsons episode where Bart is like playing Little League football or whatever. And the last game they play is against Arlen, and then you see Hank and the guys, and they're like, we drove 2,000 miles to watch this, and then they leave.
Yeah, I can't remember that. But I have to go back. You have to send me that.
Yeah.
Though, I mean, Bob's Burgers and King of the Hill, that's actually a perfect match, because I feel like grilling the burgers, even now, you could be like, Bobby and Bob are cooking competition together.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't there supposed to be a cooking competition episode?
Yes, that would have been perfect time to do it. So yeah, just I think to what Jimmy said, I haven't watched the full season yet either. I just watched this one episode. I might binge the whole season after this. Part of me wants to do it episodically and watch the episodes fresh for the podcast, but then, you know, the nerd in me just wants to sit and watch them all. So we'll see what I wind up doing.
Well, if you want to binge, I think you can, because I will keep myself pure, mm-hmm. as always, and I will be week by week, also because my schedule is very busy, so, like, and I love to stretch it out, you know, sometimes when you binge it, it just kind of fleets too quickly, so I like to savor every episode of King of the Hill, because it takes a while for you to get more animated shows.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
I don't know why they don't just, I don't know. I just feel like everything needs to be greenlit faster. That way we can just, like, this season's ending, we can just start working on the next season.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, it can stay on a normal schedule. Because animated shows back in the day used to just be yearly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Well, we know for a fact that their seasons 16 and 17 have been signed off for Hulu. So they are probably already, if they haven't started already, making those episodes.
Well, I'm excited to talk about this one.
Yes, this one is a great one. I was actually watching an analysis beforehand, and they were talking about how it did feel kind of weird to be the first episode of the season. But I think it worked. I guess they were just like, it feels like it should have been the third episode of the season, just, but, you know, whatever. And it's still a great episode. This episode's called Failure to Hard Launch, so it's the first episode of season 15. I feel vindicated by this first scene because when they first announced that King of the Hill was coming back and that there was going to be like an 8-year jump and it was going to take place in modern time and whatnot, one of the first things I thought, I mean, there are a lot of things that I thought, but one of the first things I thought, and I think I even brought it up on the podcast once, was there's going to be an episode that deals with an electric pickup truck. Like, that would be perfect foil for Hank. Either like somebody buys one and he has to argue about it, or like he considers buying one, but then he has to conflict in his mind about like going all electric and going away from gas or whatever. But you know, we get it. This is exactly what we got. So I feel vindicated. The only thing that would make me feel happier, and if the episode already happened, don't tell me, is there's got to be an episode where Hank accidentally eats like an in-universe version of the Impossible Burger. Like, that would probably be a perfect episode for Hank. And then, like, just the conflict he has about enjoying fake meat. But anyway, I digress. I went off on a tangent. So in this episode, it's early in the morning and Hank is looking out the window. And Peggy looks at him because he looks kind of forlorn. And it's like, oh, Hank, are you upset about the edging? And it's like, oh, I've got perfect edging. Apparently he promised in his wedding vows that he would always edge things perfectly, but he is upset that this truck is blocking the house, like parked right outside of the house. Peggy points out, well, there's no laws being broken, which is true. In Texas, you can park pretty much any state. You can park on the street as long as you're not like parked in front of a, I think the basic rules is if you're not parked in front of an exit or you're parked in front of a fire hydrant. So you can't like block a driveway. You can't block the pathway leading up to the house. You can't block but you know, he's upset and he's like, well, you know, they're blocking the house number. And so if we call 911 because somebody chokes on a grape, they're never going to be able to find us. And Peggy obviously points out that this is like a BS excuse. So she's like, what's really bothering you? And then Hank's like, oh, the truck, it's electric. And I don't want people thinking that I own an electric truck. And then, you know, Peggy's trying to be comforting. And she's like, oh, nobody's going to think that, like, just because it's parked there. And sure enough, everybody thinks it. Bill thinks it. Boomhauer, even Luke Jr. thinks that it's Hank's truck. So they are. So Hank is a little upset, which I kind of think is in character for him. I feel like after living in Saudi Arabia, granted, it's a big oil country, but also a lot of rich people. Like, I guarantee there are Teslas out there and stuff. I feel like he would have come around on the idea of electric vehicles, but I think this is also an example of where Hank is always going
to
be Hank.
I can't relate to Hank. I do not own an electric vehicle, but I am pro that because I've seen like my friends own an electric vehicle and like it's like the cost is basically at the end of the day what I'm thinking about. But I can feel Hank's side because I do have some friends who are just like anti electric vehicles. They do not like them at all. They think it's like the pain of existence of this world to have an electric vehicle. I don't know. To me, kind of they look the same. Like electric vehicles to like regular, like their counterpart model. So I'm just like, okay. I did not know it was going to be about an electric vehicle because the episode doesn't start with like shot of the vehicle. It's Hank, like you said, looking out the window. So I was like, oh, Bill's doing something crazy. Of course. Or like something's happening across the street. Because Bill lives across the street from them, right? Or is it the house next? Because there's like the house next to it that's always being rented out or something's always happening. Because it's not in their circle who owns the house next to that Bill, right?
No, I think Boomhauer O is on one side of Bill and then there's like another house on the other side of Bill. Like, so I remember that one episode
with the Super Bowl guy.
Not just that, but the episode, well, yeah, that one. But then there's also another one where I guess the guy drops dead or whatever. And so they rent out the house. And it's the one where Luann moves in with the roommates. But they originally try to rent out the house to be a clubhouse or whatever. And I think, if I recall correctly, they were like, he had a pool? Bill, you lived next door to him for like 15 years and you didn't know that he had a pool?
Yeah. Is that the house that turned into the McMansion?
I don't recall if it became a McMansion. I know Luann lived there for a little while as a renter. I don't recall what wound up happening to it. It very well may have been the one that got turned into a McMansion.
Because it's not a McMansion, because it's a normal, it looks like a normal house, but it houses all those like power units or whatever.
Yeah, because like it was a normal house, and then the guys renovate it, then the owner sells it, and then Ted Wasonisong buys it just to bulldoze it and put up the McMansion.
Yeah, and then it gets torn apart, like, because of the weather, like,
mm-hmm.
And then they end up putting, because the guy wanted his name on the thing or whatever, yeah. Something like that, so it ended up being, like, it's a false house, basically, housing, yeah. like. So I wonder if that's, I bet someone's drawn a map of Rainy Street, like, so we could see it all.
You know who has the squirrel tactics? He actually has a whole episode where he describes where everybody's located in the area.
Okay. I'm wondering, well, okay, because that's, long story short, that's what I thought was happening. Something was happening at the other house that's next to Bill's, like some crazy adventure, like some other family moves in. So that's why I thought it was good. I wasn't expecting an electric car, but it did bring out the side of Peggy that I love, this insane, I'm going to solve the mystery of Peggy.
Yes, we'll get into that a little later, but there is just this whole Peggy definitely going full Peggy in this episode. In a lot of ways, I'm going to go ahead and say that I think the truck story is kind of the B story to the show, whereas the A story is Bobby, which I kind of like, because I feel like this is them saying in so many words that, like, Bobby is going to be a bigger part of the show now, I guess, is one way to look at it. So I do like that. But anyway, so we go over to Bobby. He's at the restaurant. He's working with Emilio. And, you know, he's trying to, they're doing the restaurant thing. You know, they're cooking. They got customers. They're getting things out to the tables, getting things out to the wait staff, yada, yada, yada. Bobby's like, he wants to go and see Connie. So he asked Emilio, you know, you got this covered. And Emilio is like a total bro here. Like, he respects the bro code 100%. He's just like, yeah, you can go. I know what you want to see your girlfriend. Go, and I've got everything covered here. And then I like how he's like, you know, when he used to work jobs where he'd sneak off to go see his girlfriend, and then, you know, then he'd go and sneak off and see his other girlfriend, and then both of them found out about each other, and so he had to go and like hide from them and stuff. So I absolutely love Emilio.
He's great, and I love him and Bobby together. It's a great duo. I love it even more than I love Joseph and Bobby together.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I just love kind of the shorthand that they have with each other, because it's just like they're working seamlessly together. It's just it's a great moment. And yeah, of course, I love the, like, my girlfriend found out about my other girlfriend, so now I had to sneak around everywhere.
Yes, 100%. I just love that about him. I think I said it last season, and I think I stick with it. He is definitely my favorite original character for the new season.
Definitely. There's so few, though. There's so few characters.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I mean, there's Brian Robertson. Yeah, there's not a ton of new characters. I mean, there was Willow, but I haven't seen the rest of the season, but I feel like we're pretty much done with her. Other than that, yeah, there's not a ton of new characters. I guess Chain's been kind of upgraded. Like, he's much more of a regular than he was in the original run of the show, where he was more like a side character who showed up every now and again. He's definitely much more of a main character now. Generally speaking, they haven't introduced a whole bunch of brand new characters to the show.
Yeah, but yeah, Emilio is the best. I would agree. He is the best out of all the original characters. So. And he's moved up past some of the original ones, too, for me. So.
And then I love when Bobby goes and sees Connie, and, you know, she kind of makes an excited squeal, and we see they're dating and whatnot. They're watching Bernie Mac on a laptop in bed, which was kind of cute, but also shows that Bobby's still very much into comedy, even though now he's like a restaurant owner, restaurateur, as they call it. I do love that they show Bobby making creme brulee, and then Connie's working on a robotics project, and the robot cracks the creme brulee and stuff. So just kind of seeing all their kind of cute dates that just kind of work for both of them based on their personality. And then they discuss how they're going to announce their relationship. So they take a cute picture in bed of each other and they're like, oh, we should post it. And Bonnie's like, oh, you want to hard launch it now? And it's like, no, it's like you do a soft launch. And it's like an ambiguous thing where it's like you should take a picture of two wine glasses and it leaves it open to interpretation, but you kind of know what they're saying, which this must totally be a Gen Z thing. So Jimmy and I are both millennials. I don't recall this ever being a thing in my dating life. Heck, I just got a girlfriend like a year ago and we didn't do a hard launch. Granted, neither of us are really on social media, but we didn't do a hard launch, soft launch thing. So it must be a Gen Z thing.
I am a young millennial. No, we're actually the same age, but I'm a young millennial. No, I'm not. I understand the concept, of course, but I feel like I also, in my life, have always done a soft launch. Like, not in the sense of social media, but I've always just, like, let a small group of people know if I'm seeing someone. And then, you know, as time progresses, like, more and more people know. You know, I start off with just, like, a small circle of friends. And then as the relationship gets more serious and whatnot, it grows and grows, you know. So I feel like in that sense, I do a soft launch. I don't know. Maybe I'm just weird. I just don't like to post my relationship on social media.
Okay, so I could agree with that. So I've done that before where, like, you're starting to get a little bit serious or you start dating a new person, you get a little bit serious. So you only tell, like, your inner circle that, hey, I met this new girl or I met this new guy and blah, 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 blah. And then as it starts to get more and more serious or you become official or whatever, then you start saying, like, you know, you start being more open, introducing them as your girlfriend to pretty much everybody or whatever. Yeah. So, like, there's that. But, like, the whole, oh, we're going to have... So what they wind up doing in the episode is, like, they do, like, the heart hand thing where, like, one part of the heart is Connie's hand, the other part is Bobby's. But you can't see either one of them. So it's like, clearly there's, like, something romantic going on. But who is it? Who knows? I don't know.
I mean... It's going to be brought up later in the episode, but when they did that, I was like, this isn't a soft launch. Like, we could tell whose hands these are. Like, it's not like ambiguous as the two wine glass. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I was just like, we know.
That's true.
But I'm glad they did it because it leads to, I thought it was a funny moment.
Yeah.
Later on.
Well, the main reason they do it is because they're worried about Chain since Chain just broke up with Connie. So there's, like, this, I guess, debate going on where it's like, well, they were in an open relationship. Chain was with a bunch of other women. So, you know, and Chain ultimately broke up with Connie. So why would Chain really care? But then it's also like this balancing act where he's also the majority owner of the restaurant. He's technically your boss. So you don't want to piss him off. So they just do the soft launch.
Well, he did punch that guy who drank his water from his water bottle.
Yes, that too.
We don't know what soft launch it is, right?
Mm-hmm. We go back to Hank and the guys, and they're trying to figure out whose truck it is because it still has dealer plates, so it's not even like they can go and look up the license plate number and stuff. So they go and they look for clues, and Bill's being Bill. He's like, oh, maybe it's a woman who wears yoga pants or whatnot. Like, Bill's whole thing is he's hoping that it's a young single woman or a youngish single woman who moved into the neighborhood. So you're going to see that a lot from him. Dale is just like, oh, maybe this is a tech billionaire from California who moved here to avoid taxes, which happens a lot. There's, and especially in Austin, I don't know if it's still a thing, but when I was living in Austin, there used to be like that whole don't California or Austin or whatever kind of campaign because so many people from Silicon Valley were moving to Austin. Now, there's a bit of a misconception, at least in the 2010s, and you know, you're going to learn something here today that has nothing to do with King of the Hill. In the 2010s, there was an influx of people moving to Austin. Some estimates said about 100 people a day were moving to Austin or something to that effect. A good portion were from California. The majority of the people were other Texans, though, moving from other parts of Texas to Austin. However, in terms of out-of-state relocation, California did have the most people coming to Austin. But the most people who were coming to Austin were coming from other parts of Texas. The more you know, the fun things to learn there. But it's kind of funny because he is kind of relaying that kind of message that I remember hearing when I was living in Austin in the 2010s.
I am from California, but I feel like I'm a Texan. And every time I say that, what was that episode with the Alamo? And then, like, Hank's, like, not from Texas or something like that.
Oh, when Hank learns that he was born in New York, yeah.
Yeah, and then, like, Peggy's like, well, I'm a Texan, too, because we all fought, in the, like, he's like, yeah, you're right. Fine, everyone is a Texan now.
Change planes in DFW, you're a Texan.
Yeah, so, you know, I did feel like, I've lived in Texas most, like, almost my whole life, so... I would consider myself a Texan. And yeah, I would agree. Like, there was that time where it's just like, you felt like, oh, it feels like everything's changing. But not really. But you were just like, everyone's like, it's the Californians. Every change that's happening in Austin is because of the Californians. But yeah, I can understand where he's coming from, though.
Yeah. So Bill thinks it's a person with yoga pants. They're looking in the car for clues. They see like a balloon. They see a back pillow where Hank's like, oh, they must be sore from, you know, bending down in their safe spaces. Peggy has a theory that it's like a murder mystery. So she thinks, so she like takes this premise that there's a murder involved, which is kind of funny. Hank decides to leave a note. And it's funny because when he's writing the note, because first he's like, dear sir, but then I guess he doesn't want to call them a sir because they own the truck. So they're like, electric truck owner. He's like, no, I don't feel comfortable calling it a truck. So then it's electric vehicle owner. And it's just funny watching him write the letter. And he winds up writing just like a single line. It's like, please move your vehicle, sincerely, Hank, or something like that.
Doesn't Peggy make fun of him? She's like, do you want to be so chummy with, like, a murderer or whatever?
Like, yes. Like, you shouldn't put deer in there.
Yeah. This is peak Peggy, though. Like, I'm loving the energy she's giving me right now in this episode. She also calls him... Does she call him the Scooby Gang, or did I just pick that up?
No, she does call him the Scooby Gang.
She references it a lot in this episode. Like, every time she enters and they're huddled, she's like... Zoinks? I think, did she say Zoinks or something? Like, she made another Scooby reference. So I was like, oh, that's pretty interesting. Peggy's definitely, I'm loving her in this episode. And I think that's what we need, though. Like, that's what I want from Peggy. Like, little bit of Peggy goes a long way, everyone. So just remember that. Like, and I think they used her really well.
Yeah, I agree. So back at the restaurant, Chain's looking for Bobby. He's trying to figure out who Connie took a picture with. Who's this fat-fingered bleep? I do like that they drop the F-bomb, but they always bleep it out. But, like, they didn't even, like, entertain the idea of having an F-bomb in the original run. So I guess you can tell it's on streaming now. Like, who's this fat-fingered bleep that she soft-launched with? And Bobby's trying to play cool or whatever. It's like, I don't know. Like, we're just friends. We just talk about politics and stuff. I don't know anything about anybody she's dating. And then Chains kind of starts to suspect Bobby a little bit because of Bobby's behavior. It's like, let me see your hands. And then Bobby's like, And then Emilio tries to take the fall for it. Because it's like, oh, no, Bobby's not dating Connie. I'm dating her. And Chains like, tell me one thing about her. She's Asian. What kind? My favorite kind. It's like, so Chain fires Emilio, and then Bobby's like, no, don't fire him. I'm the one who's dating Connie. Emilio's just covering for me. And then Chain fires him anyway for lying. And then Bobby hates that, you know, Chain fired Emilio because Emilio was like, you know, he was essentially a sous chef. Bobby depended on him. The restaurant would not run without him. Chain's like, you know, Kylie Jenner, do you think she cared about all of her Emilios? I learned this in business class. You can go and throw a rock and hit Mexicans who'd be willing to do the job. And then Bobby's like, they teach you to throw rocks at Mexicans in business school? And then Emilio's jokes are out. It's like, I can't be unemployed for too long. Then I'm going to go back to my habits of ceramics and day drinking.
Okay, the fat finger thing, I was just like dying. It's so funny, and like, it's funny in the awkward way of like someone talking horribly about you, but they don't know it's you. And then it's just like, oh, do I want to say anything? So I love that. I laughed really hard about that. And Chain just being like, asking like, what kind of Asian is she? He's like, my favorite. And then Chain's like, yeah, that's a good, like, that sounds like the right answer to me. Yeah, that was pretty fun. I really liked it a lot. And just to like, does he say you could throw a rock and hit a Mexican?
Yeah.
Or was it Emilio?
It was either I think it was a Mexican.
Bobby says, like, oh, they teach you to throw rocks at Mexicans in business school, which is pretty funny, too, because that's what Chain learned.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of a given that Chain's kind of a jerk. So, I mean, kind of a jerk. He is a jerk.
I mean, he's got that frat bro energy.
He does. We go back to the alley. They get a letter back that says, like, let's coexist, namaste, and whatnot. And so they decide to stake out because they realize that they're street cleaning. The truck's going to have to move for the street cleaning at 6 a.m. So they figure, okay, we'll just stake out and wait for the car to move, and then we'll figure out who the owner is. Back at Robotic Chain, he's interviewing new chefs, and he's got one guy who's like, oh, so have you cooked before? He's like, yeah, I was a chef at a Venezuelan prison, and, you know, murderers love pizza. And so
for their last meal.
Yeah.
For their last meal, they love pizza.
Exactly. For their last meal. And then, like, the other guy's like, I like pizza, or something like to that effect, which is kind of funny. They went ahead and hired them. A lot of this was just to get back at Bobby, because now that there's, I guess, not as competent staff, Bobby's going to be at the restaurant all the time, so he can't be with Connie. And it's funny because one of the guys cooked all of the sashimi. And then Bobby's like, no, it's supposed to be served raw. So they, like, literally have to throw away all the fish. Connie comes back and Bobby mentions that he misses Emilio because Emilio was competent. He was his bro, et cetera, et cetera. And Connie is like, well, just call Chain's dad, because Chain's dad's not going to be happy to hear that, you know, they're ruining the investment. And, you know, Bobby's like, I can't do that. And he's like, there's only two things that Chain's afraid of, the Babadook and his dad. So if you want your restaurant back, you need to talk to his dad.
I thought it was funny because when Connie first shows up, she goes to Bobby. She's like, I miss seeing your face. And it's like, it's been a long time. I just wanted to see you real quick because I missed you. And then Bobby's like, I can understand that feeling. And Connie's like, you're thinking about Emilio, aren't you? And he's like, yeah. I also love when he cooks all the sashimi. And Bobby tells him it's supposed to be raw, and he's like, I guess I'll throw out the trash then. And then you just see him in the background pulling all the sashimi and, like, just slowly dumping it into the trash can. It's those funny, like, little gags that really get me. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed that. Yeah, it's just so funny, those two. Like, when he's like, the prisoners love pizza as their last meal. The guy's like, I love pizza. And he's like, better watch out for this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of want them to stay around. Those two might be really funny together.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they come back in another episode. Even as, like, background characters, that'd be funny.
Yeah.
Back at the alley, Boomhauer has his banjo, and I guess I can't remember what song he was going to play. I should have wrote it down. I think it was either Dust in the Wind by Kansas or Blown in the Wind by Bob Dylan, whatever. But yeah, Bill's like, oh, play. I'm gonna just say it's Dust in the Wind. He's like, oh, Bill, you know, or Boomhauer, played Dust in the Wind. And Hank's like, well, Boomhauer only has two hands, and there's a guitar part in that. Let me go get my guitar. So Hank gets up to go get his guitar, and then Boomhauer reaches into the cooler and sees that they're out of beer. So he's like, ah, I got to go get more beer. So Boomhauer leaves. And then Dale's like, oh, I got to take a pee. And he's going to, you know, he wants to pee outdoors for, you know, whatever. And so he's like, okay, I'll be right back. Bill, don't screw up. So then Bill's staring at the car and he passes out a little bit. But he comes to, and, like, the truck's still there. But then all of a sudden the truck drives itself and parks itself across the street. Everybody sees that it's moved, and then Bill tells Hank that the car moved itself, but of course Hank doesn't believe Bill, so he's just like, oh, you must have fallen asleep. Which is, like, this isn't the first time we've seen something like that happen with Bill. Like, the episode, I can't remember the name of the episode, but it's the one where the Alamo beer is poisoned or whatever, so they soft sell an Alamo in America. It was Bill's turn to buy the beer, and he was like, well, they were all out of Alamo. And he's like, are you sure? Did you check? He's like, well, if you think I'm so dumb that I couldn't figure it out, we could all go to the store to check out. And then, like, the next scene is they're at the store, and then Hank's like, huh, they are out of Alamo. So it's just like, they just never believe anything Bill has to say, even when he's telling the truth.
I was shocked. I mean, like, I guess I always knew cars could move themselves, right? Because they're like, the car just moved by itself.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, interesting. Well, I didn't think it moved by itself at the beginning. I thought someone had hopped into the car and like when they went to go check, because they went up to the car again to look and see if someone was in there. So yeah, I just was like, when Hank's like, I'm going to go get my guitar. I was like, bring tissues too.
Yeah, it always makes him cry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of those cars can drive themselves, at least short distances. I feel like that truck is supposed to be an in-universe version of a Rivian. I only think that because I've seen a lot of Rivians. I don't live too far from a Rivian dealership, so I've seen my share of Rivian trucks, and so it kind of reminded me of one of those. I wonder if those ones can park themselves or drive themselves.
Huh. I don't know. I don't trust driving cars, though. You've been in one, though, right? You've been in a Waymo.
Yeah, we have Waymos and Zooks in San Francisco, though I think Zooks is still in a wait list phase, so not everybody's on it, but anybody can use a Waymo in San Francisco.
Oh, well, I guess we have Waymos in Austin, too, but I haven't been in one yet. The truck moving by itself, I thought was very interesting. Yeah, I just love a good stakeout. Gosh, there are things I want to talk about, but we need to wait until the final act of this episode.
Yes.
So I'm going to hold my comments, but know that I will be bringing a lot of stuff up at the end.
All right, we'll put a pin in it. Next, we're at Ted Wasanasong's office, and Shane and Bobby are there arguing with him. And by the way, I still hate Ted's voice. I think I hate Ted's voice more than I hate Khan's voice.
No, really?
Yeah.
Whoa, that's crazy, because I do not like Khan's voice at all.
Well, I don't like Khan's voice, but I think I hate Ted's voice more.
Wait, they didn't change the voice actor, right?
Yeah, for Ted.
Oh, did they? Who was doing Ted's voice before?
I can't remember who was doing it before, but like he sounds completely different from the original season. Like, somebody's not even trying to sound like Ted Wasanasong.
Oh, it was Toby Huss originally.
Yeah, I don't know who's doing it now, but he's not even making an attempt to sound like Ted Wasanasong.
It says Kenneth Choi. Kenneth Choi?
Huh.
I don't know who that is, though. Oh, I know who he is. I like him. I guess it's just not good here.
Meh, whatever.
He's a Captain American.
Yeah. He's also, I think, the principal in No Way Home, or no, Homecoming, Spider-Man Homecoming, he's the principal.
Yeah, interesting. Okay.
They go, Ted Wasanasong. Of course, Bobby and Chain are bickering about firing Emilio and whether they should have, and da-da-da-da-da, and, you know, Bobby's going after Chain's sloppy seconds and all that stuff, and Ted's just done with all this, and Ted's like, you know, I bought this restaurant because you wanted to be a professional snowboarder, which is different from last season, because I believe last season he wanted to be a DJ or something like that instead of being in the restaurant. Or maybe it was like, maybe it's two different things. I think it was he wanted to be a DJ instead of going to college, and then maybe he wanted to be a snowboarder instead of owning a restaurant. I don't know, whatever. Anyway, ultimately, Ted boils down to comes to the conclusion that Chain spoiled. Like, Ted mentions that, oh, you know, he started out in a mailroom before he became, you know, rich and famous and all that stuff. So Chain's like, you mean we started out poor? Which kind of proves his point, if you think about it. It kind of proves Ted's point that Chain is a bit spoiled. So Ted's solution was to make Chain take Emilio's place and make Chain work at the restaurant, which of course neither of them are happy about, because one, Chain's not a good cook, he's kind of dead weight, and of course Chain doesn't want to actually do any actual work, so both people are not thrilled. And Chain's upset because he's like, oh, we flooded the basement at our frat house for a naval fleet fighter, whatever it was, and I'm missing this. And I don't know. I mean, I kind of get it. There's a lot of people who are born into wealth. You see it all the time. There's people who, like, their parents weren't born into wealth, and they crawled their way out of poverty or whatever, and now they're really wealthy. But then their kids wind up just being, like, spoiled brats. This is an example of that.
I thought he was going to uninvest, Ted.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just going to, like, he was like, you guys are going to have to figure it out on your own. Because I kind of like the solution that he came up with, which is, like, Chain working there at the restaurant. But I wish he would have, I don't know. I think it was funny when he was like, we grew up poor, or, like, you were poor. Just, like, working in the mailroom. Yeah, I also think it's going to be a running gag for all of King of Hill to, like, what Chain wanted to do. Oh, you wanted to be a professional snowboarder. It's going to be, like, crazier and crazier. Like,
mm-hmm.
you wanted to replace Drew Carey on The Price is Right, remember?
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be the running gag of, like, he just kept wanting to do, like, crazier and crazier things.
Maybe. I hope that is a running gag. That'd be funny. I do like how in the next scene, like, Chain is really getting under Bobby's skin because he's trying to understand what Connie likes about Bobby, because Bobby doesn't have muscle tone and Chain is chiseled, and Bobby doesn't have a good car and Chain has a good car and all that stuff. So Chain's confused what Connie sees in her, and Bobby's confused why Chain cares, because, you know, Chain was with a different girl every night. Chain broke up with her. Why does he care if Connie's seeing Bobby at all? And apparently Chain actually did develop feelings for Connie and even proposed to her, but then Connie said she never wants to get married, which is kind of concerning to Bobby. And then, of course, it's traditional sitcom scene where they get locked in the freezer or the food cellar or whatever. But it never plays out. Like, if it were a normal sitcom, it would have been a bubble episode where they were just in that, and then they were just in the food cellar and they kind of bonded over it. But it get resolved really quickly because they try to get out and they're like, well, who else has a key? Well, I know only one person who has an extra key, and it winds up being Emilio. So they call Emilio out, but then Emilio uses this opportunity to negotiate with them because he's like, you know, I got a lot of Michelin star restaurants that are wanting me, which I guess is technically true now because, so fun fact, you learned a lot on this podcast. Fun fact, the Michelin company only reviewed restaurants in 5 areas in America until about maybe 2 or 3 years ago. So the only places that ever got stars in America were the Northern California, San Francisco Bay Area, Los Angeles area, Chicago area, Washington, D.C. area, and New York City area. So there would have been no Michelin restaurants in, there would have been no Michelin restaurants in Dallas. However, as of, I believe, either 2 or 3 years ago, Michelin started ranking places in Texas. Austin actually has 2 restaurants, I believe. The one's going out of business, sadly.
It's a tough biz, tough world, the restaurant biz.
Yeah.
I like that Emilio's coming back. I mean, we all knew, right? Uh-huh. That he was going to come back at the end. I wish Chain would have, like, continued working there.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it would be a fun, maybe, like, him and Bobby could start, like, bonding together. But I mean, you got to keep the character, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's just how it always goes. It's like why Bill can never find love. Everything has to go back to normal by the end of the episode. So it's funny because he kind of negotiates a price to come back. So first Chain says he'll hire him back, and then of course he wants to be hired back at a higher rate, and so they negotiate, and he I think Bobby offers 20%, and then Chain offers 10%, and then Emilio's like 25%. I also want to be the executive sous chef, and every Thursday I want my Steely Dan cover band to be able to play. Yeah. And then he's like, I don't even know what kind of genre it is, which is funny because, like, that's the one thing that Chain and Bobby can agree on is that they have no idea what Steely Dan is.
But we need that episode. We need, like, them in the background playing, right?
Yes.
Emilio's cover band.
Yes. But yeah, episode has Emilio coming back. So we jump back to the alley, and the guys are doing their mystery, of course. They're reading the specs, which is absolutely something Hank would do. He's reading the specs on the truck, and apparently, like, oh, it can be driven if the driver is within 200 feet of the car. And then Hank's like, oh, and the car door will automatically open if the driver is next to there. That actually sounds useful, like if you're walking up with bags of soil and stuff. And the guys kind of snap Hank out of it because, like, hey, it's an electric truck. And he's like, yeah, you're right, you're right. And ultimately, they realize that the truck belongs to Nancy. But it's funny because Peggy tries to tell the story about how she was able to deduce that it was from Nancy and stuff. Like, oh, and then I saw the balloon, and the balloon said this. And then I saw that Dale pretended to pee, so that way he would be away from the truck, but close enough to make it drive away and stuff. But what we really learn is that Nancy just called Peggy and was just like, hey, did you see my new truck?
I love, she's trying to figure this out. So she has a little whiteboard with all the, like, suspects. And one of them is like, there's Nancy, but then under it, it's Luke Jr.
Yes.
And then Nancy calls and she crosses off Luke Jr. I also love when she's like, reveals that it's Nancy's truck. And then she's like, let me explain it. Explain how I came to this. And Hank's like, I'd rather hear Dale explain this. And then she continues to go on her elaborate story of how she deduced this.
Apparently it was a gift from the studio or whatever when they renewed her TV show, Selling Arlen show or whatever. Hank was like, why didn't you just park it in front of your house? And then Dale's like, well, because then people would judge us. And so I guess Dale was obviously ashamed. I do like how Peggy's like, all right, I've solved yet another case. And then Hank's like, it was just one case, a 100% success rate.
So what I was going to say before is like, okay, I didn't know it was Dale's. Like, I didn't know it was Nancy's truck. Like, that surprised me. But when you think about it, it's like, Dale wasn't as involved as he usually is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, a mystery. Dale's usually, like, super into it. I'm surprised he didn't lay any, like, traps down around the truck or, like, had surveillance mm-hmm. cameras. But, like, the signs were there, I think, now that you know, like, the mystery.
Yeah, if you go through a second watch, you'll notice that Dale will never get too close to the truck, too, to prevent it from accidentally opening. So, like, it's definitely, I mean, all King of the Hill episodes, well, almost all. There's a few that I would absolutely skip in the entire run of the show, like Mrs. Wakefield. But generally speaking, all episodes are rewatchable. So if you rewatch this, keep an eye out for that stuff. You're going to notice it. Back at Cottie's place, Bobby is there and, you know, talks about how everything's happy. And Amelia was able to let him, you know, take off early because Amelia's got everything covered. And Bobby mentions that Shane said some interesting things about how he proposed. And, you know, he's like, oh, no, that was nothing. He was drunk off his ass when he proposed and yada, yada, yada and stuff. It's like, well, that wasn't really the part that concerned me. It was that he said that you said you never want to get married. And she's like, well, I don't know. After her parents' divorce, she kind of doesn't believe in the institution of marriage, which is surprisingly common. Like, when you don't see a great example of marriage, sometimes you just think, oh, marriage isn't really a thing. So then Bobby's like, so you never want to get married? And she's like, I don't know. And she's like, Bobby says the right thing. He's like, I'm not saying I want to get married today or anything. It's just I want to know that, like, the option is open at some point. And then Connie's like, well, ask me again in 5 years. And he's like, fair enough. Which I'm like, okay, because they're like, what, 21, 22, 23 at this point in time. They don't need to be thinking about marriage right now anyway.
Yeah, I really like that about Connie, though, at the, like, overall. It's understandable that she doesn't want to get married at this moment just because she's seen her parents get a divorce recently. And, you know, the example of, like, what a marriage should be is kind of been shattered, her perspective of, like, what that should look like. So I can understand, like, you don't want to get married, but I love that Connie is like, I feel this way now, but I don't know how I'm going to feel in 5, 6 years, 7 years. So, like, I'm not closing the door. I'm just saying today, this is how I feel. So I love that about Connie. I love that Bobby is also like, I'm willing to wait too. Like, I'm not in a rush to get married, but, you know, we just all need to be on the same page.
And they're too young to be thinking about marriage anyway. Like, you know, live life a little bit. 5 years, they'll probably be, what, 27, 28? That'd probably be a better time to think about it. We wrap up Bobby's side with them finally hard launching and announcing that they're on a relationship on social media. We go to the alley, and Dale makes a comment about how John Redcorn had a charger installed at his house for the truck, which kind of insinuates that they're still together. They haven't come out and said it yet in the season, but they have kind of toyed with the idea that the two of them are together. Also, it kind of insinuates that John Redcorn is still in the season. So I'm wondering if Jonathan Joss was able to record episodes before he passed or if they recast him. Quite frankly, I haven't looked it up. And I kind of want to be surprised, so I won't look it up until something happens. But everybody gets a notification on their phone saying that the relationship status has changed. And, you know, they're like, oh, it looks like they're launched. And Hank's like, yeah, I wonder what took them so long to say something. And then all of a sudden we hear, like, from the other house, Min and Con yelling out because they are so upset about Connie dating Bobby. And the episode ends.
Well, their fear wasn't their pairing, so, but that's just a little bonus cherry on top for us all. I really like how this episode ended. It was very sweet after all. Like, it's a great Connie and Bobby love story episode. And I really like it. I'm definitely rooting for those two to be together. Like, I feel like last season I wasn't, and I wanted Bobby to, like, explore the world. But now I'm like, you know what? They're cute together. They work, and they're having a great time. So let's see how this goes. I don't know. I hope we explore more of this, especially with Cotton Mint, when we get a chance in the future episodes.
Yep. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in the next episodes. I think I will go ahead and binge at least some of them and then take my notes. What I probably will do is I'll just binge them all, but just to watch them. And then when it's time to record an episode, I'll watch it again and take note.
Sounds like a plan. I will continue to watch week by week. Do you know how many episodes there are? Is there 10 or is it 8? Okay. So quite a bit. And then, yeah. So I'm excited. Like I said, I'm going to be at Comic-Con this weekend. Hopefully there's some King of the Hill stuff there.
There's got to be. Like, it's probably not going to be as big as last year because they had that whole activation last year. But I think it was also because that was the big launch after 15 years. It was also a very successful show, so I could see them wanting to continue to hype it up and whatnot, but I don't know that it's as urgent this year to hype it up as it was last year because it's not as big of a deal, I guess you could say.
Yeah, but we'll see, and I'll definitely report back what I experienced when I come back.
Ultimately, I think this was a great episode. I loved it. It feels like an old King of the Hill episode. You know, it feels like they've got their rhythm. They're bringing back some of what made the original run charming, but then they're also kind of adapting, you know, this new world of Hank's being a little older, the guys being a little older, but more importantly, Bobby and Connie being a bit older, having their own lives as adults.
Yeah, this is a great first episode. I feel like it's a good start to the new season. It's not like last season where I was like, I do not like this first episode at all. It's great. I'm sure we'll do it again where at the end of the season, after covering all the episodes, we'll go back and reflect on all of it. So maybe I'll change the episode order or whatnot. But for right now, this is a pretty solid start. I will say it doesn't wow me. It wasn't like exciting, but it wasn't like cringy. So it's a great, solid go. It makes me want to continue. Yeah. So
I think Emilio was definitely the MVP on this one. He definitely had the best lines.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, he's good at the one-liners. So
I love that about Emilio. I'm glad that Emilio is not gone. Like, I didn't think that it was ever going to be an issue that he was gone. At most, I thought maybe he would be gone for another episode and come back. Kind of like when Family Guy killed Brian for all of 2 episodes and he came back. Like, I felt like that probably, at worst, that'd be it. We'd lose Emilio for an episode and then he'd all of a sudden be back and, you know, something would happen that would result in them hiring him back. So I was never too concerned about that. But it was nice. And I also kind of like seeing Chain, or a little bit more of Chain outside of him just being a douchey frat boy. Like, he still was largely a douchey frat boy in this episode. But, like, kind of him opening up about his feelings a little bit. It was nice to see a little bit of him that was different.
Yeah, I would like to see him. I don't know. I think when we first talked about before King of the Hill came back, the reboot, or not the reboot, but continuation, the newer seasons, I really thought he was going to become part of the core friend group instead of kind of still being the bully of the group or whatnot. So I would love to see him join them. I think if we can get past his frat boy personality and he can really harmonize with the other 3 characters, Connie and Joseph and Bobby, I think it could be a fun dynamic and we could really take off. I am glad though, what I thought was going to happen is not really happening, where it's we're transitioning away from Hank and Peggy and the guys and we're going more to Bobby. I am kind of really enjoying the AB stories between what's going on back at home and then what's going on with Bobby's up there in Dallas. Was it Dallas? No, it's Fort Worth.
I think they're in Dallas.
Oh yeah, Dallas. Yeah. So what's going on in Dallas? So I'm enjoying it. I am ready to watch the next episode, but I'll hold back a little bit.
Yes, it is going to be fun. Well, that's all I have. What about you?
I think that wraps it up. It was a good, solid, good episode.
Awesome. Well, join us next time as we cover episode 2 of season 15. But until then, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.